Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we dive into the sustainability transitions that are reshaping our world. If you're curious about where the planet and its inhabitants are headed, you're in the right place. In each episode, we'll chat with experts from Triodos Bank whose work relates to these changes, tackling topics like the energy transition, circular economy, and what sustainable finance really means. Our goal? To bring you the latest insights on what it takes to create a more balanced and just world. But we don't just want you to listen, we want you to be part of the conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes and share your thoughts, ask questions, and leave us a voice message. Welcome to Money for Change. Let's get started. Welcome to the 8th episode of Money for Change and the first episode of the new year 2025. My name is Sanna, one of the three regular hosts of this podcast. And thank you for tuning in again. I hope you had a wonderful time in the holiday season. And of course, I wish you a very happy and healthy new year. Now over to more serious stuff. Maybe you prepared a lovely conscious Christmas dinner with organically produced foods. At the moment, nearly 5% of food consumed in the EU is organic. The EU aims to increase the share of organic agriculture to 25% in 2030. So you can imagine this is quite a challenge in the coming 5 years. In this episode of Money for Change, we ask the question, can everyone eat organic? We will explore this question today with Adam Kybert, Fund Manager of Triodos Food Transition Fund Europe. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Isn't it?
Thank you for joining us, Adam. And as always, Triodos Bank Chief Economist Hans Stegeman. Welcome, Hans.
Thank you.
Before we really dive into the question, Adam, we have a lot of concepts when we talk about agriculture. We have sustainable agriculture, regenerative agriculture, organic agriculture. Mm-hmm. Can you help us demystify what is what?
Yeah, sure. I think the easy place to start is with organic agriculture. Organic food is made without the use of damaging practices like pesticides for crops or hormones for cattle, without antibiotics, which are commonly used in animal agriculture. So that lowers the ecological impact of food production. And there is it's become increasingly popular over the last 20, 30 years. It is a set of standards. It's a set of principles. There are boards in each country that enforce if you can call your product organic. So when a consumer goes to the store, they say, okay, it's organic. I understand what that is. I understand what the practices are. So that's quite a clear definition.
It's really a controlled system.
It's really a controlled system. And if you buy something that is certified organic, you can go and check out what the standards were, when the producer was last tested, and you can have a good degree of trust around it. Regenerative is a very different thing. It's really an ethos, an approach to agriculture, which is seeking to regenerate the soils and the ecosystems around agriculture. The two can absolutely overlap. Many of the practices interface, but it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. For Triodos, when we talk about regenerative, we often mean organic agriculture plus some key agricultural practices which improve the soil, which improve biodiversity and reduce the ecological impact. So that's how we see it. Organic, very much a standard. As a consumer, you can go out and purchase an organic. Regenerative, an incredibly impressive and attractive movement at the moment that's gaining more and more momentum, but is more this ethos and approach to regenerating our soils.
And it's really a kind of hyped approach, if I can say that, regenerative, right? Because many companies are talking about we're on the way to regenerative agriculture.
Yeah. It really is. And, there's conferences popping up and mm-hmm. there's brands calling themselves regenerative. And this is what we should want, right? We have massively degraded our environment over the past 60 years in our agricultural soils. 60% of soils in Europe are hugely degraded. This is a problem. We need to regenerate it. So there is, rightly, a lot of enthusiasm around it. I guess the challenge is unlike organic, you don't have the standards, you don't know exactly what it is. So I think the consumer needs to find the brands they trust or find the approaches they trust that are connected with regenerative to really be sure that they're buying something that's quality. That's a lot of work.
Yeah, so regenerative can still mean a lot of different things, I guess, while organic
really
is quite standardized.
Exactly right.
I was thinking about regenerative, if there are no standards, but it's mm-hmm. an ethos. my impression of something being regenerative is that it improves, mm-hmm. brings back nature and biodiversity, whatever. Is that also what you observe, or is it doing less, still in the less harm phase?
It's a great question. And actually, you know, these standards and principles, they are being developed over mm-hmm. time. Because really, if we want to regenerate something, well, we should measure whether it's regenerated something. Yeah. So we should measure the outcome. So I think one of our businesses we work with, Crowd Farming, they're working with their farmers to actually measure the soil, right? They measure the soil on a 6-monthly basis to really understand what's the microbial content, what's the carbon content, all these things. So they're building up that evidence base that these agricultural practices are improving and regenerating.
Okay.
But for me, that, I think that's a key differentiator. Organic is a standard. You understand what it is. Regenerative, you want to know what the outcome is. And you want to know really what you're regenerating.
And as a consumer, of course, you cannot know all these terms and what they actually mean. So you need this kind of, you know, standards to be sure.
You need the standards and you need the brands and the education to help people really get their head around it.
Yeah. And can you say, Adam, that both organic agriculture and regenerative agriculture is sustainable agriculture?
Yeah, I think that's a good sort of catch-all term for those approaches. Yeah, sustainable means we can sustain it over the long term.
Yeah.
Both of these approaches are overlapping, but different ethoses to really improve the sustainability of our agriculture.
So in any case, talking about agriculture, we really need to distinguish between the different concepts and be clear about what we mean rather than just saying sustainable, because then everyone expects that it will improve. So just diving into the affordability of organic food, we often see that organic food in the supermarkets comes with a higher price tag. Why is organic food considered to be much closer to the true price of food production, and what is that?
Sure. So the true price is the market price of the food plus the associated social and environmental costs, very simply put. So for an economist, it's the externalities. Mm-hmm. You're charging for those externalities.
Hans, externalities?
These are externalities, yeah.
Okay, but for someone that's never heard of...
Unpriced side effects of production in this case.
Yeah.
So negative side effects of production.
Air pollution.
Exactly.
Soil, the degradation, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the damage to the soil from the pesticides or the fertilizers, which are sprayed on the field to create the wheat that goes into your bread, right?
Yes.
This is, you're not charged for that as a consumer. You're just charged cost of production plus some profit and processing. You're not charged for that externality.
So all that pollution is for free?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, exactly right.
The taxpayers now, eventually.
Not yet.
Future, maybe well, future taxpayers.
Future generations.
You know, I said 60% soil is degraded. That's what's paying, right? Is we are sort of depleting those resources, and particularly the carbon content and the microbial content in the soil comes down every year. That's where the cost is. Now, organic doesn't have the same negative consequences. So the price of it is just closer to the true price because you don't have that gap between them. The challenge with organic agriculture, because it doesn't use pesticides and fertilizers and these other methods, firstly, the yields are somewhat lower per hectare, around 20%, although it's different by different crops. The other thing, you need a lot more labor. You need a lot more people working to de-weed, to do all the processing.
You can't do that with machines in the same way that
increasingly.
You
increasingly. I mean, this is actually an area we look at the fund, technology to lower the cost of, to reduce the amount of labor required to reduce cost. But it's quite complex, it's more niche, but it is a growing area.
But there's also, as you told, there's a problem with having a true price then, because the true price is, like we said before, about the externalities. But if the production is lower, then your costs are even higher. So even if you have a true price, the price of organic food is still higher than that true price that compensates for the negative effects on soil and et cetera. And that's a challenge.
What you're saying is even if you would charge the externalities of like regular food production that is currently mainstream, then the price of organic would still be higher.
If you would say we have normal food production and we still use pesticides, et cetera, we compensate for the negative effects on the soil and on air. But then still, production is more efficient. because you don't have any problems with negative effects on your crops, etc. Yep. And it's less labor intensive, mm-hmm. still. Then.
Yeah.
So then it's still relatively cheaper, even if you take kind of the externalities.
That's interesting. So if we would do true pricing across the board?
And that's also my problem with true pricing.
Okay.
Only putting a price on negative effects is not enough to drive the system. You should simply say, this pesticides, we should not use them, at least not in this scale and in this in such a way. Even if you're going to price it, it's still more efficient for a farmer to still use them.
Mm.
And therefore, it's not enough to scale up organic farming. And that's also why with true pricing, you think the market will solve it, but it's not enough.
And that's not, So we'll get back to that. Yeah. We also need regulation, I guess, to make this happen.
But it's still an important concept.
Definitely. At least for the in-between time
where you need it because it helps at least to bridge part of the gap that you have in terms of
pricing. And to really make clear the negative consequences from conventional agriculture and to put a price on them so that we can really understand it.
And compare it.
Yeah. And compare it because, you look at the price on the shelf, the conventional milk is cheaper than the organic milk as it currently stands. But the negative costs are not calculated there. Yeah. So it's...
It's a good way to show that.
Yeah.
In the current context we're in, should we actually prepare for higher food prices overall? And if we should, what changes would be necessary to make organic food more accessible for people who are less wealthy, who cannot afford it?
I think it's a really interesting question. I think if you look back historically, mm-hmm. Back in the 50s, a US household would spend 23-25% of their income on groceries. Now it's 9%. Yeah. In the Netherlands, in 1935, it was a third. Now it's 12%. So the relative cost of food in our society has dramatically come down. And that's wonderful, right? We've been able to feed 8 billion people. We're much richer and wealthier as a society because that price has come down. But the question is that now too cheap? And we've also shaped, I think, our societies, and you'll know better hands than me, but salaries, social benefits, just how we structure our society. Cheap food really sits at the core of that because we've designed our system that way. Mm-hmm. We do need to pay more for our food through different mechanisms. What we're currently doing is unsustainable, but we've got to be careful where the burden of that falls. It cannot fall on the poorest, but perhaps we need to return, perhaps not to one third of Dutch income going on food, but to a more reasonable level, which reflects the environmental and social costs as well. So it is, I think it's an incredibly important issue. We do need to help those at the bottom of the income ladder. We also need to help the farmers and compensate them for doing the environmental
management.
Yeah, because
that's the other side of the coin, right? Farmers earning too little, especially in emerging countries or developing countries.
Yeah, and here.
Also here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's also one of the biggest challenges to reform the agricultural system and say, food needs to be more expensive. And we have a problem with consumers at the bottom. That would help the farmers if food is more expensive, but only if they get the money that the end consumer pays, which is also a problem because of the food supply chain. And there's another challenge, subsidies in Europe. But also, I think all over the world, I only know it a little bit in Europe, go to the biggest food producers, help to sustain the current conventional system.
And then you mean the biggest farmers?
The biggest, not only farmers, but also producers of in food processing industry, etc.
And like the biggest food factories.
Yeah, and the biggest farmers.
Yeah.
And that together needs to be solved to say, okay, how can we in some way get the true price or a better price for food. It will become much more expensive, but also redistributed in such a way that at the bottom of the income distribution, people can still pay their food, that farmers get the money they need, and that system works in a different way. So it's never one simple solution, as always.
That's often the case. Such a shame. And we've seen in recent years some budgets... supermarkets like Lidl start to sell exclusively organic fruits and vegetables. Would scaling be a solution to make organic food cheaper? Is this a development that, you know, from your expertise, you do support?
Yes, absolutely. Scale helps. It's not the whole story, right? And we have seen growth in the Dutch supermarkets over the last 5 years, and the relative price difference has come down over time. So if it was 63%, it's come down to about 48% last year, right?
Price differences.
Yeah. Now that's still huge, right? That's still a big challenge, but that's really driven by scale. And it's different for different products. Milk, it's about 9%. For chicken, it's about double. So it factors. So yes, scale would help. That would help with the labor. That would help with standardization. But it's not just scale. As Hans said, you know, how does the value chain work around this? Can we, I know people who use community-supported agriculture, buy vegetable boxes from locally, or businesses that sell products online. Those things, they can help disintermediate and reduce costs. Innovation, changing our diets, all these other things need to come into practice as well.
So currently in the value chain, there are a lot of companies earning money from the foods that do not produce the food necessarily, right?
Yeah.
So reducing those, for instance, could be a solution part of the solution.
It could be. And just other ways of buying. I mean, supporting your farmer directly is a great way of doing it. I mean,
because
in reality, you know, we've also seen huge shifts towards highly processed, very convenient ready meals, right? So consumers do like intermediation and they like people who process the foods to get it ready for them. Yep. But we've also seen growth in those direct relationships. You buy straight from the farmer, you buy online. E-commerce has actually opened that up and made it possible. Also, businesses that sell in bulk. We backed a couple of these where they sell, you know, okay, you buy 5 kilos of almonds, but when you boil it down, it's much cheaper per kilo than it would be going to the supermarket. So I think, you know, scale would help, but it doesn't get you all the way there because of the reasons we've talked about. Mm-hmm. But there are other things which as consumers and as government you can do to help bring more alignment between conventional and organic pricing.
And I've heard defenders of mainstream agriculture argue that the demand for organic is simply not there. It will remain niche. How are there other ways to boost demand rather than, of course, the prices is a big issue and that's going the right direction very slowly. But are there other things that we could do to persuade consumers to buy organic foods and lower environmental impacts of the food sector?
Might be that we repeat that I repeat myself, but it is kind of stupid to say there is no market, right? If it's more expensive and it's more difficult to produce and say we keep our system, our conventional agriculture system, the same and say there's no demand. No, because it's highly subsidized to make bulk efficient. And there's also a reason why we do it. If you look in the Netherlands, after the Second World War, we need...
Yeah,
a lot of food.
No hunger ever again.
That was the mantra. Very successful. Yeah. So we should not forget where it came from.
Yeah.
It was a big success. Mm. But what we always have with successes, it's going too long in the same direction. And that's where
we are
now.
It doesn't serve us anymore.
No. So we should reorganize how we produce that food. And that's the only way. It's not saying, there's no market for it. No, this market has grown too big. Yeah. It's too much only driven by efficiency, too large scale. And yes, that's what consumers want at the moment because that's the way they are raised.
Yeah, I like the historic perspective that you brought in with prices, Adam, to reflect on, you know, the money we spent on food years ago.
Yeah.
Same goes for animal proteins. That was in the 70s. I think it was half of what we're eating now in animal proteins.
Much lower.
So what is normal now and what's, you know, companies think consumer wants is very much driven by these companies again.
And government. I think there's a number of great case studies. Japan is what we all talk about, how wonderful the Japanese food culture is. You know, it was a lot of central planning went on there. Government saying, hey, we need more dairy and nutrition in the diet. We want to not let junk food grow too much. Government sat in the middle of that. So government can really shape that food culture too. I think to your question, another point, you know, yes, price. Well, how would you convince people to spend more on this? And actually, if you look at the data, about 70% of people buy organic because they believe it's healthier for them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think historically, the evidence base has not been so strong because it's hard to measure, but it is getting better and better. And there's a couple of really good papers out now. You know, if the soil you grow this stuff in has more microbes, has more life in it, you typically get more nutrition in the fruit and vegetables that come off it. So some stats, you know, orange with 30% more vitamin C, bananas, 23% more potassium, more fiber.
Potassium.
Bananas have a very good source of potassium. And if you have a potassium deficiency, bananas are the way to go.
Okay, and there's no check if you have a potassium deficiency.
Well, you get 23% more from
organic
bananas.
Exactly. But there's a serious point there that the vitamins, nutrition is typically higher in these things. Yep. This is evidence is showing. And if that really lands with consumers, hey, I don't need to buy really expensive supplements. I don't need to go on this super crazy diet.
Yeah.
I buy organic and I get more nutrition.
You know, if you have kids, but also for yourself, you really want them to eat like nutritious foods.
This is, of course, not a big thing that needs to happen to not have to reflect the reflection there's no markets, behavioral change from consumers that they understand, or either because of health effects or because they want it. so it's, yes, of course, price is important, but behavioral change of consumers that they want to buy different stuff also helps to bridge the difference in price, which still exists.
Yeah.
It's also what you need.
Yeah, and I guess there's also a lot that supermarkets could do themselves by, you know, the location of organic foods in the supermarket, that they're easier to find, etc., that they're more discount on them, etc.
Yeah, but that also depends on margins. Yeah. If the supermarket can make more money out of conventional food, they will never...
A little did the whole move to organic.
It's a good point. And actually, it's a little off topic, but we see more and more really good brands, like really... sexy, appealing young brands focusing on organic. And I think that makes a huge difference as well. The association is grubby carrots and, all these things, which it is, and that's good. But I think, you know, meet the customer where they are as well, the consumer where they are. They want convenience, they want excitement, they want health.
Yes.
And so I think organic has a really, you know, a next generation of brands who can really play into that.
Good to know. I just want to also zoom in, before we're out of time, to the whole issue around productivity and land use of organic. As we said in the beginning, you know, there's a difference here with mainstream food production. So when we look at artificial fertilizers, they have historically boosted crop yields. So what are the main challenges as we move towards more organic farm practices?
Yeah, so I mean, I think we talked a bit about them. So basically, if you want to become organic, you have a 3-year journey. It takes 3 years to be converted fully as a farmer.
From mainstream to organic.
From mainstream to organic. Now, you stop using pesticides and fertilizers day one, but it takes a while for it to leave the soil, to leave the system. And only after 3 years will you be certified organic. And in the meantime, it depends on the crop a little bit, but typically the productivity really drops without those synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. Interestingly, in tree crops, the trees have to learn how to get nutrients from the soil again, because they've been used to having it put at their roots. They have to really...
They have to kind of go back to school.
It's tough and it's painful. And when you learn something new, it's difficult at first. And then you get back into it. So after 3 years, productivity really recovers. Then, of course, you have the labor point that we talked about. It just needs more labor. But for the farmer, that means you have a pretty high-risk, difficult transition period for those 3 years from... So, because you can only sell your product pretty much for conventional prices. You can't sell it for the higher organic price, but it's not organic yet. So obviously you can't sell it. So they go through that difficult... And if a farmer has, 40 seasons in their life, you're asking them to give up three, almost 10% of their seasons to make this risky transition. So, you know, that's a big deal. And I think financial institutions like ours should be there to help them.
That is something, you know, also a bank like Triodos Bank is doing, right?
Absolutely,
helping them with that transition period.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is a it's a difficult time, and it's many farmers want to do it. They understand. I mean, they see the soil. They understand the challenges.
And there's this whole thing also about land use of organic farming and the need to actually improve biodiversity, or let's say reduce the loss of biodiversity. How do you balance the trade-off? And is there really a threat from organic farming towards biodiversity?
I don't know. I was thinking that you would go in another direction. I was still thinking about productivity and land use and the question, do we have globally enough land to produce food?
That's a good one.
A lot has been written about it. And I think there are two schools in general. One school said, but if we have to produce the same amount of food and we have less land and less productivity, it's impossible. If we need more land and have less productivity, it's impossible. And they're right. But they have a wrong assumption. Because if you want to change the system, it's not only about the supply, so how much can you produce, but it's also about the demand. So and also about the composition of the supply. Mm-hmm. So probably less meat and different diets, and then it is possible. So I was still in my head with this question, because it's very important that we, organic farming or regenerative farming, can have very positive effects on biodiversity, and that's the way to go, but only if you change the system. So only if you change the diets.
And actually our current food system is very inefficient, right? Because we use so much land for animal protein production.
Exactly. If you keep the same demand patterns and consumption patterns, no, we can't make this transition. But we shouldn't be keeping the same demand patterns, right? That's not sustainable. This is where the issue is. So I think this question often is trying to minimize the role of organic and regenerative, when actually the question is, look, we need to eat quite a lot less animal proteins in the next 50 years, right? There's lots of ways we can do this. Precision fermentation, you know, alternatives.
Yeah, more technology.
More technology.
But...
And change the farmland we have to be more sustainable, more regenerative. I think that's the answer, not, we can't do the whole world as in current consumption patterns on organic, so we shouldn't do it. That's not the right approach.
I always find that such an interesting argument of the more mainstream agricultural, you know, practices, that it's efficient while in effect it's really inefficient, right? And I guess working together with nature, as organic farming does, is in the end more efficient.
And more sustainable long term.
And more sustainable, of course, Just going into the role of investors, Adam, what do you think investors could or should do to make sure organic agriculture is becoming more mainstream, more affordable, and what are the obstacles we need to overcome that investors can play a role in?
I think there's probably roles for investors and capital that's willing to take the risk and willing to understand what the transition needs. There's a role for capital across the value chain of food. I think at the production level and the growing level, you need that financial risk sharing, and you need the investment to help farmers and processors take that risk to shift towards more sustainable practices. You need that support, because it is a difficult time. So we talked about that. I think you also need innovation to lower the costs of food, of processing. We talked about the mechanization of weeding, right, in organic. At the moment, really, you know, someone has to go...
Because you're not using the pesticides.
You're not using the pesticides, so someone physically has to go and pull them out. There's a couple of really nice, exciting sort of robot manufacturers in Europe, these autonomous robots that just go around and pick the weeds. We need more like that. Those need to be cheaper, need more scale, and that helps you bring down the cost. And then I think also the place where we often look at as well, you need, you know, the brands and the consumer-facing piece to do that education around health, around why, you know, if you have the money... And obviously, some people will not have the money, and we need to look after them. But if you do have the money, why should you spend a bit more of it on organic food? What are the benefits? Why is this making a difference? So I think there's a role for investors in all of those areas.
Maybe I want to add to that. This is within the current system, And I think we should also address, also as investors and financiers, what is wrong with the system, where the subsidies go to, what kind of unlevel playing field we have, why it is. And that's the reason why it is so difficult, because essentially it's very simple.
Yeah, currently organic is rowing against the current.
Yeah.
So,
so you have to do better and you have to do different stuff, not because consumers don't want it. No, because you have to compete with conventional farming, which has so much advantages, which are at least not sustainable in the long run. So also as investors and as a bank, we should address that. The same as we did with the fossil fuels that we say subsidies for there, therefore are unsustainable, are damaging the earth. Why the hell are we doing this? And it's the same for conventional farming.
Yeah, so let's create a level playing field for organic and then it will, you know.
And then it's not so difficult.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this conversation, we started with the question, can we all eat organic? How would you answer this? And what are the key takeaways that you really want to stress for the listeners to remember?
We've really talked about some of the challenges to us all eating organic. I think there are good places to start. So milk is about 10% more expensive, organic milk versus conventional. Eggs about 20%. Start with some of those basics where the price difference isn't so great. And really focus there. I think that would be my one tip. The second would be, you know, think about how you spend your household income. You know, I think food and food purchasing and our consumption is so deeply ingrained from such a young age. It's so cultural that we rarely step back and say, why do I buy what I buy? Why do I spend the budget I do on food, right? We're attracted to...
drink a glass of milk every day, which we were taught, I guess, since kindergarten, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So and you always look for the bargains in the supermarket. What's 2 for 1, right? Really reflect on that. Maybe I should spend a bit more, if I have it, on those really sustainable and healthy products. So I think that's my sort of second challenge.
There's a lot of literature on system change, on the food system. There's also a lot linked to post-growth. Mm. So the idea that we really should change a lot. And from that perspective, I think a few things are important. We did not discuss food waste in general, because that's also a relatively quick win. We discussed sustainable diets. That's really necessary also for the health of people. We have obesity. We have, of course, also have Ozempic, but still we have obesity.
let's not
go into that.
That's a whole other podcast.
We can make three podcasts.
No, we've discussed improving productivity or organic farming. I think that's an important route to go. It's also, I think, financially relatively easy. We should not forget inequalities. So having food, access to good food for everyone is an important part of every transition. If we fail on that, we don't get any transition. And the last point, I made it already 2 or 3 times, changing subsidy schemes is very important.
Really creating that level playing field.
Yes.
Before we end up, we have the hopeful and dreadful news, Hans, and it's partly linked to this conversation, right?
Partly. Yeah, it's I think, hopeful news. We did at Triodos Bank a survey on the Dutch people about five transitions that we as Triodos promote and finance. And we found out that there are more Dutch people in favor of than against those transitions that are, in our view, crucial for the shift to a new economy.
And what transitions are we talking about?
Energy transition, social transition, food transition, well-being transition, resource transition. You can find everything on our website, of course. And we can put something in the show notes, probably. That was positive. We also found out, and that's linked to what we want, what we discussed, that one of the transitions, so we talk a lot about tipping points, and we say if 25% of the people are in favor of this transition, we are closer to a tipping point, because we don't need a majority, what people often think, but we need a substantial minority, let's say 25% of the people, to shift norms and to change behavior and to move faster in a transition. The transition which scores the lowest is the food transition. We should not forget it's in the Netherlands. And you said on average 5% in the EU is organic. And
in the Netherlands. 3% in the Netherlands of organic food. So Netherlands is lagging behind quite a bit.
Yeah. And there was also quite, so we also asked people, what are you in favor of such and such measures? And if we talk about meat, for instance, in the Netherlands, people don't want to touch that politicians don't touch their meatball or whatever.
Yeah.
Because then it's.
So it's still quite difficult to change consumer patterns.
Yeah, I think linked to this podcast, I think food is very personal for many people. They have it's in their values. It's how they are raised.
It's a cultural
with a glass of milk.
Yeah,
and that's very hard to change.
Yeah.
But it is necessary, as we discussed.
Yes, and it's a good thing that on the other transitions, people, you know, we often think that people don't want change, but apparently they do.
That was the positive news. People want change. They differ in who should be in the lead. Is it themselves? Are it companies?
Governments.
Yeah. It differs quite a lot, but it was in generally, most people saw also their own role.
Mm.
So we were quite positively surprised by the outcomes. There's still a lot of work to do.
And the research report is on our website, right?
Also, I shall put it in the show notes.
Great.
In Dutch, unfortunately.
And then it's already time to wrap up this 8th episode of Money for Change. Thank you, Adam, for joining us today. And thank you, Hans, for your contributions. And of course, a big thank you to you for listening. And I hope you will tune in again next week on our episode on how to reduce wealth inequality, hosted by Ernst.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.